Well, what this is about is something we've coined, the idea of leading with a developmental bias. The principle applies at home, family, your relatives, your grandkids. I've got a 16-year-old that is very engaged with us. It capitalizes on the environment of life and responsibility. And you know that this context is where life it really happens. And what I've seen over the years is the loss or the lack of awareness of people who are leading in this, that the tremendous tools available to a leader to develop people in the context. As a leader in this environment, you can give assignments, you can give feedback, you can observe them. It's not something you can delegate over to human resources, but you as a leader or you as a participant even in this, you can constantly, there's picking up. And I begin to see the same principle. A couple of our kids are homeschooling and homeschooling their kids. And I observed a day of it, and then we were out taking a walk, and suddenly my daughter says, oh, come on over here, to her young son, who was about 8 or 9. And he said, well, they had just been teaching on ants, and here's an anthill. So he said, oh, he's so interested. He says, tell Grandpa what you know about ants. And, oh, he started to talk about ants. And then we talked a little bit about working, and while the Proverbs talks about, you know, the ant. And so we talked, I mean, life becomes, the whole environment becomes the classroom. And it only happens if you think that way, if you just think that way. You know, just there's just so many times that we can tap into that in our life. So you don't need to be the leader of this. But just in the midst of this, and particularly as we get older, we have lots of opportunities. We can tell lots of stories of it. But this is how to lead with a developmental bias. That's what we're talking about. And it's something that you see. I was attracted to it because I saw Jesus doing that all the time. He was talking on the road. He taught. Even at the feeding of the 5,000, he engaged them. He didn't just say, all right, get everybody in teams of groups of 100, and there's a boy over there that's got some fishes and loaves, and bring over here. He didn't do that. But what did he do? He asked the question. He says, they've been with us all day, or matter of fact, for 3 days. And how can we feed them? And asked them a question. They said, well, we don't have enough. We don't have enough. It's just not. He said, well, what do you have? And then he says, go look. And they looked, and they came back with 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And then he said, okay. And so he engaged them. He brought them in to learn, to think that there's, it's so easy for us to just perform. And I spent 7 years in the military as an officer, and I could see that happen. And there were few people who stood out who were leading with a developmental bias. They didn't know the term, but you could tell they were always giving something. Rather, it's easy to give the answer, but it's so much better to say, you know, well, what do you think, or what should we do, or how about this? And so we could give lots of illustrations of Jesus doing it. All take place in the environment, and the creation and of that environment is that it's a developmental environment. And I've been around people that with that, and we've tried to do that ourselves. But people just are responders to that. They say, you know, it's not just about doing things, but it's about mine as a leader. It's about developing people to make a greater contribution to what we're doing, but also develop them in their personal lives. And so it's just fun to just see that, because there's always opportunities when we're looking at it. And so what we'll talk about, a couple of tools that we've used to help set the environment up for that, or set the relationship up, that we're going to be tapping in on things. You know, is that feedback, or there's an opportunity here, or giving assignments and all the rest. So what it's talking about is, within the midst of this, is this the leading, or just even leading with a developmental bias. And that's just so important that we're always aware of that. So let me just ask the Lord to bless us on this, and then Jack's going to take the first part, and then I'll jump in afterwards, and we'll just expose you to some of the ideas, and let's have it be real interactive. I mean, if you any time a question or idea or push on something that we only have. Yep, yeah, I do, right here. Okay, I'll just pray. Father, we thank you for the model of Jesus, and we thank you for the leaders in our lives and influencers in our lives that took advantage of what was going on in our world, the context of life, responsibility, of work, of parenting, and helped us to learn, saw opportunities to push us to grow in our thinking and our understanding, but also in our skills and abilities. And Lord, I just sense that all of these men have left those kinds of contributions behind them and even in their present lives. And so I pray that by discussing these things as we are, will do, I just pray that it will give us more insights of how to be more effective in this area. And we just ask your presence and ask your blessing upon us in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. This is going to be highly interactive, so we do want you to engage with us in this. As you think about growing up, other than your parents, think about two people who significantly impacted you in your youth. And jot those down for us. Okay, now list two more who impacted you after the age of 25. Impacted you maybe more in your career. Okay, let's talk about this. What? Why did you list these individuals? Who were they? First of all, who were they? Not necessarily names, but what were their roles in your life, Ben?
In all cases, they were individuals who were outside of my immediate growth circle and environment that let me see things outside of that circle that I really didn't know were there, and in terms of potential for me, relationships.
Good. Uh-huh. That's good.
I mean, one was a teacher, and one was a boss.
Okay. Good.
Both of mine were teachers.
Good.
One was a chemistry teacher. That's why I learned chemistry.
Huh.
Service organization at
school,
and it was more of a
leadership kind of thing.
That's good, Al.
In my later, I would say my before 25, but closer to 25, two people. One was a navigator, and one was my wife. But they challenged the status quo in my life, and I was really, came up in a family business, so everything was real structured and pretty status quo, and both these people began to ask questions to challenge status quo in a bigger thing.
Okay.
Before 25 was my natural father and my spiritual father. God led me to Christ, and after that time was a person, I think, just amazed me as little as I really was around him, how much he impacted my life as a spiritual leader, and then a person brought me into our business.
Okay. As you listen to one another And as you thought about some of these folks, what are some of the commonalities? What are some of the threads that are running through the folks that we've just mentioned?
Integrity.
Very challenging.
Help you think outside the box.
They helped you think outside the box. They were examples.
They were growing. They weren't static. They were growing in their minds and their thinking. Yeah.
Discipline.
Discipline. That's good. So what, as you think about this concept, Paul talked about a leader who leads developmentally, leads with a developmental bias. What comes to mind? What are some of the key qualities that you think that makes a good developmental leader?
When I first started teaching, after I taught for a number of years, I began to notice a pattern among the graduates out of my class. The pattern was this. The ones that irritated me the most were generally the most successful. And that, as you can well understand, bothered me for a long time. Well, I teach in communication and in media, particularly, which is more of a creative performance kind of thing than a lot of academic areas. And what I finally came to realize, what was happening, is that these individuals couldn't stand to walk in anybody's footsteps quite the same way. They were always on the edge trying to find a new path, a new direction. And that my relation to them didn't have to be antagonistic. It didn't have to be, you know, get back on the path. You know, you don't want to go out there. There are snakes and caves out there. But to try to figure out what their best qualities were and nurture those.
Okay.
And let them find their direction.
Good. We're going to wrap this. We could spend a lot of time talking about this, but for the sake of time, I'm going to push on. And we'll revisit some of this on the back side of this as it fleshes out in the context of our time together. But as you think about Jesus, I thought we could just use Jesus as an example here and take a look at maybe some of the things that he had done or he thought about in the process of the men that he selected. I was my wife and I are really committed to leading this way, but also before you can lead this way, you have to be able to invite in and recruit folks to begin this process with. And it was probably 10 years ago when I came up with this little diagram, and it works well with college students and young 20-somethings because it has to do with Oreos. And whenever you include food in with young men and women, you always are a success. And so you can, I'm going to pass these around so we can use a real tangible of example of this. But as you think about Matthew 4:19, does anyone have that memorized, Matthew 4:19?
Follow me and I'll make you fishers of men.
Okay, good. Follow me. Jesus says, follow me. And so I liken the top of this. He says, follow me. What is that? That is a challenge to a group of individuals. He says, come on, follow me. You have had a lot of people in your lives say to you, come, follow, you know, come on, help me with this or do this. It's a challenge. It's one of those things over time that can dissipate because a challenge without anything else kind of it just kind of reduces down to nothing. But Jesus says, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. So he talks about down here the bottom part of this. Oh, this follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. Sorry. That's the vision he had for this group, this motley band of young men. They're all, you know, in their teens, probably teens, maybe early 20s, but he wanted to help them In this case, they were fishermen. He wanted to help them think bigger and broader what their role is. And I was thinking about this, and here, you can go ahead and pass these around. You can have a little hors d'oeuvre before lunch as we talk. But I was thinking about this because follow me is the challenge. Fishers of men is the vision. But the thing that really holds this together, and I don't know, for those of you who had kids and your grandkids, what's the first thing they do when they get an Oreo?
Give it a bite.
Why?
The sweet stuff in the middle.
And that's what we're talking about today. I will make you. That's the sweet stuff that his disciples were drawn into. A relationship with the living God. I will make you. That is, you know, as I've thought about this, that's one of maybe the best little snapshots of what leading with a developmental bias is all about. I think there's four components as we've learned. We've worked with a lot of younger staff with Eagle Lake and the Glen here, and there are four components that I think that helped us kind of process and move through this as we looked at this intentionally. And I think that is one of the keys that Paul will talk about later, but there's a sense of intentionality with individuals. If you're going to lead this way, it takes some strong focus and intentionality. The first component that we've discovered is the shape of individuals. How many of you have heard Rick Warren's little acronym SHAPE before? Have you heard or seen that before? Used that used? That's what we like to do to pull together to help individuals understand who they are and how God has created them. And from that, they can get their arms around, and we can, leading, get our arms around trying to help them in some practical ways that can really help develop them. Not just in some just one or two areas, but because you understand their shape, it can become much more holistic. Let me illustrate this. Every year we talk about this. We just finished it a week and a half ago with our entire Glen Erie Group staff. I talked about yearly planning. So I talked about what we have done to plan as a leadership team for the Glen Erie Group with Glen Erie and Eagle Lake. So we walked through this, some of our goals for the year, this next year. Well, then we talked about how this fleshes out for them personally. And we spent a time helping them develop some personal goals. In the past, with different individuals, as a result of understanding two of the guys on our leadership team, understanding their shape, I was able to, I asked different questions of them. So if I was taking a look at Hank and John, and this is a sense of Craig and Derek. So I would ask Craig thinks philosophically. Derek thinks very practically, operationally. You can see the two different. And so if I would ask them a question, it was always hard. So I would ask Derek, who thinks very operational, practically, what do we need to do this year to be successful? I would ask Craig, what are some of the things that we need to accomplish as a result of our influence here? So how I would approach them is really different. And I think that as a result of that, it helped me understand I need to be a good steward as their leader of their spiritual gifts, what God gifted them to do, their hearts, what they really love to do, their abilities, what natural talents and skills that they have, their personality, what types of environments really are best suited for them to grow, develop, and succeed in. And then finally, what their experiences from their past, their backgrounds, how we can engage some of that in some ways to help us succeed as a Glen Erie group. So I use this. This is a little worksheet that I just want to give to you. You can take for what it's worth. And it has helped us to be able to form a little more well-rounded picture of each individual, and then from that, help them walk alongside of their roles and responsibility. I will make you. I will make you. I will try to help, as Jesus did, help them understand the ways of the Father and the ways of what a disciple is all about as a follower, as a learner of Christ. Any questions on that? That's just a little shape. That's what we talked about in just in terms of shape. The second one is Mark 3:14. Anyone know that verse? Mark 3:14. Hum a few.
Give us a start.
He appointed the 12. He appointed the 12 that they would be with him. And in the Navigators, you've all heard this in some form or fashion. This is not a new verse for you. It's the with him principle. It's the relationship. And that is a key part of, again, as we've thought about that, being with these young men and women in an intentional way. And it fleshes out in a little bit later. I thought it was interesting in Mark 6, where Jesus says in 30 and 31, the apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. So they talked about what had happened. And then Jesus, because so many people were coming and going, they didn't have a chance to eat. He says, come by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. So come away with me to a quiet place and we'll get some rest. So a lot like what you're doing right now, you're in a quiet place, you're able to refresh spiritually. And then it goes on, so they went away by themselves to a boat, to a solitary place. And Jesus then was able to debrief. Okay, tell me more about what happened and why it happened and what you did in the midst of that. So he was very interested in them, process their experiences. And that's, again, Paul's going to talk about that, how to do that in some real practical, non-threatening ways. The other thing the third thing that we talked, we'll touch on is coaching and feedback. It's so important to be able to coach and give feedback and almost in a sense, we've touched on it through some of the folks that you've identified that really helped you. We're able to model learning in some real relevant ways. And for each one of us, we could go around and talk about this, but there's almost a sense as we model learning, the folks that we're trying to help really desire and want to grow in this area. I read an article about a month and a half ago, and it confirmed something I did about 8 years ago with one of the guys. We had one of our guys was a singer-songwriter, did all the music, and I was trying to figure out a way to move closer to him, and I wanted to really help him some developmental ways, but there were just a few barriers, and I thought, I'm going to move towards him in a way that I could learn from him. And as a result of that, we'll open up doors for learning for both of us. So I asked him if he would help coach me, mentor me in writing a song. Now, that's a stretch, because the only thing I know how to play is our stereo. So yeah, that took a lot of work, and it was a real stretch for me. But what it did, it opened up doors and opportunities in our relationship that hadn't existed before. And again, the power of modeling that learning spirit, that attitude, and then asking good questions as well, which moves in toward the fourth component, I really believe, is evaluated experience. Jesus did that. He sent them out, and he said, come on back, let's retreat, and let's process. Let's evaluate what you were able to see God do through your lives. And Paul has talked about this in the past. Is evaluate. We talk about this, and you may have heard this. Experience is the best teacher. Well, we all know that part of that is right, but evaluated experience is we've discovered has become the best teacher. And it's kind of the breakfast of champions. Those men and women who are really willing to process what they're learning, the good, the bad, and the ugly, they're the ones that are going to grow and develop and get to areas that they may not get to because of their courage to be able to move through and to process that. Well, you think about a coach. Some of you have been involved in sporting events, in even music events. You have sometimes you have a coach, a teacher for music. There are a lot of different things now. We talk about professional coaches, but as you think about a coach, what are some qualities of an outstanding coach that you've seen? And this may be even from the professional realm. We all know professional coaches, football, basketball. What are some qualities that you think that make an outstanding coach?
The ability to affirm the right things and to be consistent in affirming. Any idiot can find out to tell you what you're doing wrong. I mean, I can even tell myself what I'm doing wrong in basketball. But it takes a lot more skill and intentionality to affirm the right thing.
Good. That's really good, Dave. That affirmation is so key for all of us.
I think a good coach has to be able to wake up something inside of you that makes you desire to be better and strive to be better or reach your potential.
That's good.
A good coach can identify and articulate oftentimes things that you don't know that you're doing wrong and affirm and correct those deficiencies.
Yeah. Any others?
Be able to push you beyond where you think you can go.
Good.
Good coach knows the game.
They know what they're about. Yeah. I think another thing is a good coach has permission from the coached to give instruction, feedback, and to lead, right? If you would assume that, but professional basketball has proved that wrong. But you know, that's one of those things that there's permission. There's permission in there. I think another one is the responsibility is not necessarily on the coach. It's on the athletes or the coached, those men and women who are being coached. That's an important distinction as well. We sometimes waver on that. Another thing I thought about is asking good questions. The art of asking good questions. It's one thing to give feedback or to blurt an observation. It's another thing to draw out. I think, you know, what you guys were saying is to draw out and to engage in a real motivational way those you're trying to help. And that is a powerful, powerful thing. The power of great questions can make or break, I think, a lot of time, a successful coaching, you know, a relationship like this. And to lead developmentally, that's a key component. And that we're going to talk about that. And with that in mind, I'm going to turn it over to Paul. And Paul's going to lead us through what we would call this developmental dialogue. And so as a good coach, to be able to process, ask good questions, to think together. So, Paul, why don't you take us through this next phase?
Okay. I think what has been most helpful, as I have observed and experienced myself, is that when you take a responsibility or someone comes in and takes a responsibility and you're the supervisor, or if something is new to them, the importance of setting the stage for further interaction over their development or over their situations. So we need to draw a line somewhere. And in my, I'm sure you've seen it as well, these four things that the number two part there is just what every person wants to know from their supervisor. These four areas and represented by these questions. What do you want me to do? I'm sure that you, in all of your experiences, have come on to a situation where it's really not clear. I was in a meeting not long ago, and they were trying to organize us. There were seven of us, and the person was with this Luzon group, and which is a global network of evangelical leaders and all the rest. But we were gathered together, and we were talking about some things, and it wasn't really clear what we were supposed to do, why we're here, and what our responsibility was going to be. And the conversation was going all over the place, discussion here. And finally, one person said to the leader, he says, you know, what do you want us to do here for you? I mean, we're together, we're talking. What do you want to come out with? And he thought he had clarified it because he just stated that we're going to plan a conference, but it wasn't clear what then we all were going to do and what our responsibilities were. And it's amazing how often people have no idea what their responsibilities are. As a leader, you need to constantly, and I'm sure you have, constantly clarifying what is the responsibility. Who is responsible for what? And that's a great dialogue that one can get into. I was riding in an airplane to Singapore, and I got, because of my many miles, got upgraded and was sitting next to a guy who was the vice president of IBM, hard drives. And he was 36 years old, and he was a pretty sharp guy. And so we just started to talk, and we got into a number of things, and he was very intrigued. I introduced myself as a leadership consultant, so I could keep talking to him, and didn't think I was in Christian ministries or not, but that's a lot of what I do, so I thought, well, good. So we got into it, and there was something I was working on in this area of what is it that, how do we help people grow? So I said to him, I said, you know, I've been working on this project, and do it with leaders. And I wonder, could I do it with you? And he said, oh, sure. So I asked him, could you just tell me what is it that you're responsible for? Well, he says, well, I'm responsible for the, you know, the operations to manufacturing of hard drive. It's now located in Thailand, and that's where I'm going. And I said, well, that's a pretty big, you know, general area. Let's work on putting down four or five areas of responsibility. What are you responsible for? Don't pull out the job description or anything. Just let's talk. And I said, if you don't mind, I'll take notes. So I took notes, and so we started into it. And we would get to one, and we talk about it. And I said, well, is clear? Do you understand what that is? And he said, well, not really sure, but they say I'm responsible for it. Well, let's talk it out. What do you think it is? Well, through the conversation, we came up with five clear ideas. It took us an hour and a half. And he said to me, he says, this is really helful. He said, do you do this? You know, maybe you could come and do it. I said, no, that's not the issue right now. I said, but you know what? That's only the first step. He says, but, well, this has already been helpful. I said, well, let's push on the next one. So the next one then is, let's go back to each of these five and do the second question. What does it look like when it's done well? Because the first one clarifies responsibilities, but the second one is to clarify expectations. And so if I were the leader, in this case I wasn't, but if I were the leader, I would want to talk that through. Well, what does it look like? And I can input in the conversation, he does, and we just keep working back and forth. Well, we went back through it. It took us another 3 hours. I mean, we got into anecdotal analysis. We got into some of the struggles he has with his boss and all the rest. But we got through to say, now we know what those five, at least according to the two of us, we know what it looks like if it's done well. So now we have a line. We have some... Well, the next thing, of course, the idea there is, what will it how will it help me when I or will you help me when I need it? And everybody wants to know that if I run into a snag, if something goes wrong, or whenever whenever I need help, would you help me? And then fourthly was this area is, will you periodically let me know how I'm doing? And it's interesting, as I've gotten into some of the other organizations and one mission group, I had 5 days with them, and one of the things I want to do is talk to the upper five fellows. I was coaching this new president. He's been in about 2 years, and he's done a good job of, it was an old mission, 2,600 missionaries, and he's brought them through a whole process of assessment of where are they, where are they going. Had a lot of old ways, and he knew that was going to be true, and he's begun to now introduce this. But he's got these changes needed, and people, he's doing a beautiful job because he's engaging everyone in this, and so they're seeing the need to change, and which is wonderful. But so as I was talking to these five, I asked them these questions. We actually went through part of it, and it was, but I want the CEO president, he's going to do that. But I just trying to get a feel, and it was very, very interesting what they had. They were all brand new. They had been appointed 2 months ago, and they had ideas of what it was. And a couple of them kept coming back and said, well, what do you think I should do? He's now a VP. He's responsible for a chunk of the world and the ministries within that. And it was just fascinating to talk to them about this and the desire to know what am I being asked to do specifically, and then the idea there. So anyhow, I gave the opportunity then to as we talked to the president, he's now going around and can have this conversation. And the conversation that setting you up for developmental dialogue is these next five areas. Because those are just the dialogue that will set anyone up. Now, I've done this, by the way, with my kids, the four kids, as they went off to college. I've also found out, it's this one time I realized I was always asking them when they were teenagers to get the room clean, which is the classic problem of teenagers. And so finally I realized, I wonder if they understand what it means. And we're both talking like we understand it, because he'll go up, spend some time, and come back and say he did it. I go back up, and it's not done the way so I said, okay, let's go back up to your room. So let's clarify the responsibility. What are you responsible? He says, well, I'll get the room cleaned up. I said, no, that would be true. But even beyond that, to make it a place that's habitable, that's clean, that gives you freedom to when you enjoy going in your room in a sense of where things are and all the rest. He says, well, yeah, okay, and we talked it through, and my value is higher than his, so we dropped it down to kind of his value. We got it, but we finally agreed, sitting on the bed, what he should be responsible for. Then we said, okay, now what will that look like if it's done well? Now here we found out we were both like this, so it was really fun talking through this whole idea, and what would it look like? We finally got to a point of agreement. Now, this took a half hour to get to that, because we had little stories, and, hey, Dad, well, that's you. You don't live here. I said, yeah, but I own the house, and so what required? In other words, we kept going back and forth until we finally met and said, okay, let's repeat it. I mean, let's just kind of review again what we've got. Well, it was really interesting, because for a pretty long period of time, he kept at it. But the nice thing about it was, when I said to him, is your room clean? And he said, okay, whose standard? I said, no, what we agreed with, remember? And he says, no, it's not. I said, okay, bring it to where we said, yeah, we both agreed. But I've noticed that it, even at the highest levels, it is not clear. We do a lot of assuming that the person knows what to do and the quality or the expectations connected. How many jobs have you gone into? I'll put you on the board, Ken. I mean, in the senior positions you've had, all these roles, was it always clear or did you have to figure it out?
Well, a lot of times I didn't have a clue. I mean, I was, once you got to be senior, they changed jobs, you'd be commander or something, you knew absolutely nothing about. But you were the boss.
Yeah. Whatever it was, you were the boss of it. Did you ever go back and ask someone for clarification, or did you just enjoy the ambiguity?
Oh, the people that sent me there didn't have a clue either, you know. Huh. Like international logistics, it's only one place in the Air Force where they do international logistics, you know, so the people, nobody's ever been there.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm the commander, and I got to figure it out.
Yeah.
Hmm. But, you know, you've got to listen and look and try and use the page to figure it out.
Yeah. Now, let's say... Now, just for you others who don't know me, he was a general in the Air Force, so and a pilot. Which are you the most proud of?
What?
Being a pilot or being a general?
Oh, my best time is as a captain, young captain, flying airplanes.
I know. And now tell him what you fly.
A Harley.
A Harley.
It's See, more dangerous.
Yes, it's probably... right.
More dangerous than M16.
Okay, let's just go back to you know, a situation. And what do you think it would have done for you, and not just a one-word answer, but would it have helped you into, if somebody would have sat down, let's dialogue over what you know and what I think I know, and let's reach a place where we would understand what you're responsible for?
Probably, yeah.
Do you feel it would have been possible? Or was it too much of a moving target?
Well, usually you're trying to figure out how to do it better than the last guy or trying to improve. And so just knowing how somebody else did it probably is of marginal value. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it helps. Mm-hmm. It helps to at least know... where you're trying to get to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That really helps.
So it gives you clarity as to what your part of this big game is.
And usually it's very people dependent. And a lot of times you play with the hand you're dealt. Mm-hmm. And so trying to figure out, like you were talking before, who's good at what and what their gifts are. Because not everybody's a brain surgeon, so you might be trying to get somebody where he's frustrated because he's not good at his dad and he's not doing a good job. The right people in the right place so that everybody's happy and things are happening and they're not all frustrated. And it takes a while to sort that all out. A lot of times you find out that people are doing things they don't like to do and aren't good at.
Mm-hmm. Make the shift. What about the idea of expectations for all of us? How does it help to know the expectations of both yourself and others who are your report to? How does it help to know the expectations? Does it help you?
You're under what every person wants to know from their supervisor, and then you jump down to what do you understand your responsibilities to be? Different questions. And as I heard you describing that dialogue with the IBM vice president, it occurred to me that you said, don't think about your job description. You tell me what you think your responsibilities are. So you're taking, you know, he's got some sense of what people are expecting, but you're also drawing out of him how his design, his passions match with those, because you're asking him to tell you what he thinks his responsibilities are. Mm-hmm. And something catalytic, I think, would happen in that process. Mm-hmm. More than pulling out your job description and saying, okay, boss, I want to make sure I understand what you tell me to do.
Mm-hmm. Good. And in the dialogue, that comes out. Yeah, and exactly what you're saying. Because it isn't that we throw away the job description, but sometimes the job description doesn't help. where do most job descriptions that you've been given wind up?
Some drawer somewhere.
Once a year.
It happened to you as well? And you're...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So how about you? I mean, with IBM.
Well, yes, it's interesting because I was just doing, or I'm in the process of doing performance reviews
okay.
for the last year.
Yes.
And, you know, as you would have it, you would have certain people that were high performers and you would rate them, and then the perception of what they think they are versus what you think mm-hmm. they are and what other people think they are is a miss. Mm-hmm. So you kind of go in and you kind of talk about the process that you go through and mm-hmm. how, you know, where they land in this whole priority of ranking. Mm-hmm. So sometimes the discussions are not, you know, I had one guy get really mad, as it would happen, you know. I said, well, listen, if I wasn't clear, then let's talk about that, because we don't want to make the same mistake this upcoming year. And if you don't understand something, you know, we had multiple touch points throughout the year, why didn't you ask me? Mm-hmm. And then I gave you feedback on what I was asking you to do, so was I not clear on these things? Mm-hmm. So we're having these dialogues going mm-hmm. on, but mm-hmm. it's always an interesting discussion,
yeah.
especially when you start that, because it's directly related to now, am I going to get a raise? Am I going to get a bonus? You know? So it's
sure. Do you think, Al, if you could go run the videotape back to when you began that year, do you feel a specific dialogue over what he's responsible for and what it looks like when he's done well? Would that have played
I think what would have helped is understanding better how that person operates, what their personality is like, and how they work,
yes.
and what their capabilities are, and what they need, if you will, as affirmation. Because mm-hmm. I came into the job kind of mid-year, absorbing another organization, and so now I had like 20 people reporting to me, and I had to kind of figure out what this team did that came under me, because I wasn't sure, even after they told me what they did. So we kind of worked through what that thing looked like.
Yes.
So, so now that if I look at this one individual, it's like, okay, now this person needs to be instructed this way, he needs affirmation this way, he needs to be pulled in this way. So that this is kind of what's going on.
Yes, yes.
As far as, you know, what are we going to do for 2007?
Yes.
Because between he and me, I said, listen, I depend on you. I said, you're the only one that knows this. So, but even still, your projection of what you do to people outside of our group is not clear.
Hmm.
So we have to work on that.
Yeah. And it's a valuable conversation.
Yeah.
It really is, because like you identified, it taps into some of the things they're concerned about. I was amazed that this, in one conversation, let's go back to this mission group and these five, he was a new VP, but he was pulling a lot of things that he used to do and do well into his job and into the new job. And how often that happens, doesn't it? Because I'm good at this, and that's probably why I was asked to be this. But we talked about the leadership level that they're at is a whole new level, new tools, new grips. And so the discussion then was very helpful for him. And then when the CEO had the time, the CEO brought in his expectations and ideas. And it really was clarifying. I talked to him 3 days later after that, and he just was so delighted. But what it does, given these first two, and this is, if you just move down to these two here, I'm kind of going back and forth, like you mentioned, Dave. The first one, what do you understand your responsibilities to be? And I've just kind of talked about that. And then, what do these responsibilities look like when it's done well? Once that's there, we start to get some pulling in the harness. You can start seeing. But then what's immediately becomes obvious is the question here, which of these responsibilities or expectations do you feel prepared to fulfill? Are you ready to go with this? And now we're setting them up for development. But we're going to talk first about his what he brings to the table, what he brings, and this going back to that conversation, just staying with it. So it's not, as we talked about that, and as we got into it, a lot of things came forward about this particular person. Ready, they all have to do this. But then the second question, or the actually third in this series, is what do you see, or where do you see some development needs for you in order to fulfill these responsibilities? So, and I don't ask him for weaknesses, but we ask, where will you need some help? Where will you need some development to really come through with those expectations? And that's what we've done. We're working at this. And I just see this can be done oftentimes. Sometimes this might be very formal, but oftentimes just over a cup of coffee. And my experiences as leading the different leaders in the Navigators, it was oftentimes we had some pretty long and developmental discussions about this, but most of the time it was somewhat informal, because I wanted the person to really feel free to talk about this. Now, it's an interesting thing to help people really know what's expected from, because what is the danger when there are differences of expectation of the supervisor between the supervisee? How do you feel that? How does it work out practically when there's not clarity and agreement on expectations?
Probably initially there's potentially a confrontation in terms of, well, look, one side's going to say, look what I've done, and the other one's going to say, but that's not what needed to be done. But if it's not improved on in terms of communication and expectations and realization, and eventually it's probably isolated.
Yeah. Have you ever had that experience? Worked hard and come to the discussion. It sounds like you did, Al.
Two of us go through.
So there was really disappointment, frustration. It leads to that, and it's really interesting. So again, back to my kids, we would go back in these college years, particularly talking about this, and it's really fun to watch them. My one son, two of the sons. Left, and because the military paid for their education with a scholarship, they went into the military. And so on their first place, first responsibility, they both told me, you know, Dad, it's that I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm picking up from my friends and a couple of the other lieutenants that are around here. Well, I said, well, go have the conversation with your captain. So they did. They went in, and the captain wasn't really sure. He kept saying, well, it's everything we ask you to do. And it was really, he says, it was very revealing to him. And one guy was responded quite well to it and said, you know what? You deserve to know what you're supposed to do and what you're accountable for. And he said, let's just go. And he went to the whiteboard, and they started to write out all these things. So it was really quite good. But what it's leading to, of course, as you can see, is once there's agreement there and then there's understanding as to what you do well and what I need help in, then you have access to the person, because then you say, hey, 2 months down the road, hey, get a cup of coffee and come out of my office. I'd like to chat with you a little bit. And you just can talk about this whole, where, how's it going? You know, what's going? You said you feel it's these things are coming together. Yeah, all right. Well, there's one that's not. Yeah. Well, how about this idea of development? This area, I put you in touch with so and so, would be a colleague who really knows that well. Are you guys meeting? Well, yeah, we've gotten two meetings, but we need to get back again. But I said, has it been helpful? He says, yes, really helpful. The dialogue. This guy knows his stuff. I said, okay, great. You know. So this is what happens as you then you're developing, and it sets some ideas here. Picture that last little circle we had there to keep going and to keep it going, and that's the kind of thing that we're after. And then the question is the last part here is, what kind of feedback is helpful to you? Have you ever been asked that question? Al, what kind of feedback do you like?
Well, as it relates to performance, I'd like to know, am I on target, am I in the right direction? You know, if it's a presentation to seniors, did I cover, you know, the material well, reach the objective, or what are the things that I need to improve on? That's what's most helpful for me is, okay, I did these things well, but what are the things that I need improvement on? Because mm-hmm. that's helpful for me.
Yeah. And it's really good to have then some idea, then a further discussion as to what I need improvement on is how can we get that started? Is it some particular place? What kind of feedback do you like, David? What's helpful to you? How you've done. Mm-hmm. You get feedback in your job?
Oh, yeah.
More than you need?
In academics, as you will probably all appreciate, because you've all suffered from it or enjoyed it at various times, academics are sort of like cats. You know, they often have a very definite idea of what they think they're supposed to be doing, and nobody else in the world really knows as well as they know how they should be performing. I think one of the important ingredients in feedback is sort of a stream of feedback, not sort of so much a post-mortem of, okay, this is the end of the project and you really blew it, as opportunities in the course of the project to say, you know, maybe initiated from a leadership standpoint, how do you feel that you're doing?
Yeah.
What would make the task easier for you? And then mixed in with that is the opportunity to say, yeah, I agree, that probably needs more support. And what I had sort of hoped would be happening by now is sort of this kind of thing, which is maybe sort of an educational bias to it. But very often, if you get to the end of the project, it probably doesn't much matter.
Yeah.
Unless there's going to be another project with the same individual.
It's interesting, isn't it? That environment is almost the choice to be a little bit ambiguous to give you room to do your own thing, isn't it? It'd be an interesting challenge there.
You know, usually you need some kind of metrics or some kind of to measure. But
yes.
You know, in this Christian business, like, I have no idea how you come up with metrics or something. Because sometimes the guys that go the slowest are the most effective. Because this is not a numbers game. This is spiritual multiplication. It takes time. Discipleship takes time. And to have patience to let a guy go and see if he's bearing fruit. It just seemed like it'd be a really hard ball game to try to be lead. Mm-hmm. You almost have to go by feel.
Just a quick story, and it may be apocryphal, but a story that I heard was a minister in England in this little country church for 25 or 30 years and never seen anyone make a decision for Christ except for one young boy that he could remember. And that young boy was John Wesley, who got so excited, went out and found his brother Charles, and two of them turned the world upside down. If we go on sort of the notion of numbers, then I agree with that statement. That's sort of a problem until we see the end result. But I dare say that country pastor may have never seen the end result. You know, he may have been simply excited that this one kid came.
Yeah.
And nobody else had done it. Spiritually, is that to say that he was at the wrong spot doing the wrong thing? And I don't think so. I would say that he was there at that position to create that environment which made it right for that one boy to come. And if we have to use some sort of mechanism of measurement of success in terms of numbers, mm-hmm. we're all in trouble.
Mm-hmm. It just seems like the only metric you have is how you're doing in fundraising. But, I mean, you don't get to spend time with the fruit, so you don't really know. I have no idea how you.
Well, this is an interesting area. I mean, some of them are more clear. But, I mean, the Great Commission we've been given to, go make disciples. So what does that mean? See, that's what I have with these. And what does it mean? And then teach them, you know, to obey the scriptures. And, you know, you get a few of these. And then he says, I'm sending you as I went, I'm sending you. Well, how did Jesus go? So it is, you're right, it's not numbers as much as it's understanding what I am responsible for. And I think it's the same principle. We come back, and through dialogue, we can come up with, say, well, what is your role in this? And now we're talking to a regional director or a national director of a large ministry. What is your role in doing this? Well, he creates the environment this can have. He develops the people to make sure that there's good leadership and good understanding and imparting life to these people spiritually. You know, how do you do that? How's that? You know, how does your makeup, your gifts, how do you do that?
And it's a leader. How do you know if the guys are doing good or bad?
Yeah. Well, you walk among them. I mean, and certainly coming from perhaps an environment where there is more clarity and there are metrics, how many hours you do this or do that, we can come up with a pretty good idea of what it looks like by not only what the person's doing, but what the fruit of their life is, what the fruit of that leadership is creating. And so we can see a lot of things, but you're right, it doesn't have a lot of metrics. But yeah, it is. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that we touched on is, you know, we're responsible, God's called us to be faithful, and He provides the fruit. So faithfulness, fruitfulness, there's some kind of correlation, but that's why those agreed upon expectations. So even Paul's son, through his room, to a guy who works at IBM, for all of us, a lot of times we get locked out of what are our agreed upon expectations. We don't even know what we're responsible for, let alone have we agreed upon with our supervisor or someone who are a project manager that we're working with. I think that's why it's important to have that dialogue, just to say, okay, let's get our arms around this. This is what it looks like when it's done well, and let's move out from there.
Yeah, even in that, for instance, like environment, that's good. But you get a person like, I've got three new staff. Well, what's your responsibility to them? Well, help them get their ministries going, help them develop a context, but develop some team leaders, feed these people spiritually, you know, keep going, help them with the reaching and engaging non-Christian students. Is that happening? How are they, does they know how it best works? Are you coaching him? Are you helping him find his best way to do that fits him? So then if I come back again, we'll have that conversation and talk about, well, how's that gone? How's he doing on something like that? So that's where I do feel, regardless of what it is, this developmental this dialogue sets you up for to not only make progress and grow, but also find out where you can help that person, and it opens it up and creates the environment there. But then you get into the life as you go along, as I was saying before, you get into you meet situations. I was just talking to Jack about a situation where there was a leader who got into some difficulty. He handled a situation very poorly, and it hurt another person. Well, as they worked it through, there was eventually he realized he did, confessed that, shared the and got back on track, and you know things were all taken care of. But you see, if you're leading with a developmental bias, what you want to do is go back to that person and say, hey, you know, that all took place, all the forgiveness happened, everything else, but let's talk about what happened. You know, how did that come about? And let's learn from it. Jack was saying about this, you know, this developmental circle. You have an experience, then you reflect on it or assess it or evaluate it, and then you draw conclusions, and then you have implementations from those conclusions, and then you're back here. And what happens with most people, is experience, you said experience is not the best teacher. Well, we all know people had a lot of experience, but they've never profited from it. And so what you do is when you reflect on this, you can then say, what happened? And just with a few series of questions can be, like, for instance, what happened? Like, let's say this situation was, you know, tell me what happened. Tell me the experience that that went through. Okay, let's go back and say, what was the beginning of that? As we would run a videotape back, what would you have done differently? What could you have done differently to avoid that? Okay, and we'll learn some things here. And then you say, well, how about this or that? You know, you could start interacting on this. And then you say, well, what things do you feel you need to, understand about yourself and about that action that you could profit from and implement into your life? So this little learning circle is very, very helpful. And what I do a lot, because what do most leaders do here? When they have experience, where do they go with it? Yeah. They go quickly. Yeah, they go either there or right to here without any value of this. And it's interesting, I'm working with this one senior leader and asked him every Friday morning to have an hour-long reflection, not afternoon because everybody's running out, but reflect over the week. And that hour's time, and I've given him 5 questions to do that. You know, what happened this week? Kind of look at your calendar, kind of review. What went well? Okay, what went well? So he just looks at that and, okay, if you could go back and repeat that week, what would you have done differently to make it more effective? So we've got now 3 questions, and so he's doing that. And then say, what have you learned about yourself and others, and what have you discovered as to the a kind of a gap? You know, the key is discovering that gap. The gap is what I should be and what I am. So I may have a skill gap that's been revealed in that. I might have a knowledge gap. I might have a character gap as a result of reviewing this. And so this one has been taking notes. He's been now doing it for 2 months. He is his report back. He's the CEO of a company here in town with 2,000 employees. And he's requiring all his reports to do this. And he says, I have got more insight as to what's going on, not only with me, but in my world. And it's just so valuable because it picks out. And so what we've done is talked about some of the gaps he's seen. He's reflected on it. He's come up with some conclusions. And we're working at one of the implementations is the closing of that gap. And there's one skill area and there's one character area that we're just going to work on. So it opens it up and it creates, again, the environment, using your environment to keep learning and keep growing.
And that's almost the difference between 16 years of experience versus living the same year over 16 times. We're about winding down in terms of our time. I think we probably need to invite you questions, comments, feedback. What is this? Has this been helpful? Created any questions, difficulties for you?
Something that I also, in looking at this, is the context of what's happening.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the projects I have underneath me, some of them are just starting, some of them are very mature, and some of the approach that you take is very, very different as to how you're going to get, if you will, a transformation. That's what I'm responsible for.
Yes.
So how do you get that transformation happening? Because the approach that you take when you're just initiating is you're trying to sell the idea and get buying and commitment. So I tell everybody, my last 3 years have been selling on the road to all the executives to make sure that they all buy into what we're trying to do. And then there's part of my business that says, okay, we've got some of these wins, now let's try to get that, you know, more pervasive. So there's a different stage for all these things. So I think that's also critical. And then the other thing is just the skills of my people. I realize that, you know, who I have initiating them is not necessarily the one that I need to have to sustain it and maintain it.
Yeah.
Very, very different skills, and so I have to move people around.
Yeah, you have lots of different things of that nature, where you have on a general scale, you have initiators, you have developers that take what a lot of initiative there, and they'll take it and bring content and strength to it, and then you have sustainers who bring sequence and order to a lot of things. And just generally, I mean, so, and nobody's in one point, but it's maybe like this or like this. But then our jobs match up the same way. We have an initiative type jobs, development, and then you have sustaining. You know, you're always trying to help these people get into the right place. And but this idea of learning and developing people underway, it happens with every place. I was just in New York, and I just took a taxi and jumped in the car, and we were going a ways. I said, how long have you been a taxi cab driver? And he said, 22 years. And I said, really? I said, well, do you like it? He says, nah, it's a job. I said, well, what's a good taxi cab driver? What do you mean? I said, well, if you describe a good taxi cab driver in New York, what is he like? And so he told me. He started to go into it. And then he's telling me about it. And when we finished, when he finished, I said, well, how do you match up with that? He said, well, he says, yeah, I'm pretty good at a couple of those things. You know. And I said, well, what is the thing that you know most? He says, I know the city. I said, really? I said, if I asked you to go to any street, you could go there? He says, got it right in my mind. I said, have you ever thought about putting on paper what you know? He says, well, no. I said, well, let's say, I said, I'm here for 3 hours, and what would be the best thing that I could do if I just have 3 hours to see Manhattan? What could I do? So, oh, well, and he rattled off right away 5 things I could see probably in 3 hours. And he says, you can't linger. You got to move with that. I said, see, that's something you could write about. I said, you've got more. Do you give that to your passengers? He said, no, well, if they ask. I said, why not give it to them on the front end and find out why they're here? And if they only have a little time, here are 2 places. I said, you might get better tips. He says, yeah. And he goes, well, what do you do? And I said, well, and by that time we landed and I jumped out. But all I'm saying is it's fun helping people figure out ways they can grow. And it happens just by taking daily things that are happening, and not, instead of saying, dropping in. My brother owns a company, and he walks around. Don't just ask him how it's going, but when he says fine, just say what's going well. What's going well? You know, okay. Is that been going well for a long time? Well, yes, a little bit. He said, well, how have you seen that? You know, have you contributed to that? What do you wish that would happen around here in your job? Well, so in other words, by pushing with some questions, you get some feedback, and eventually you find a little niche where you can help them grow something there. So anyhow, just taking advantage of the environment of life, and with a few tools, entering into it, I think we can be leaders who are always working at developing people. So,
Paul, just hearing you talk makes me think of the Lone Ranger. When you think of the IBM guy and what he thought and what the taxi cab driver, I just can hear them saying, I wonder who that masked man is.
Oh, man. Well, it's fun, isn't it? It's just... Okay, well, Lord, just bless us with greater capacity to develop the people in our network, our homes, our families, our relatives, our those that we're responsible for in the workplace or in ministry. Lord, help us to enter into ways in which we can find areas they need to grow in and enable that to happen. And help us to be like Jesus. And we pray that in His name.